The Bible Study on KFUO Radio is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis, centered in the gospel of Jesus Christ in faithfulness, servanthood, responsiveness, and excellence, Concordia Seminary.
It's hour number two of the Bible study, the Ask the Pastor Hour. I'm Chuck Rathert, and our guest in this hour is Pastor Jeff Alexander, pastor at Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Greenwood, Indiana, where they do not have a baseball team. He's in a suburb of Indianapolis. I guess you could still be a baseball fan and follow the All-Star game. Good morning, Pastor.
Good morning, Chuck.
You got a favorite in the All-Star game?
Hey, I'm going to go with the National League. It's high time.
Why would you do that?
Oh, because I'm a National League
fan. How many straight losses is it now?
I've heard 13, and plus that crazy tie in, 2002 in Milwaukee?
Boy, that was embarrassing, I think.
It was embarrassing. So
you're going with the National League?
I'm going with the National League.
Which tells me you're going with your heart, not your head.
That's right. You got Molina behind the plate, Pujols at first. It's going to be a great night.
All right. You're going to make your boys sit down in front of the television and make them watch it?
Well, I think...
Sit down here, boys. Watch the All-Star game.
Out here in the Eastern time zone, that gets kind of late night for those little rugrats.
Yeah, but I don't have school, so...
We may put it on our DVR and watch it tomorrow.
Pop some popcorn and stay up till 1 o'clock in the morning. I think that's what you ought to do.
I'll tell my wife you said that.
Well, Pastor... I find this fascinating, this first story that I want to talk about here, because there are some of us who think that, we just argue in the Lutheran Church, or that we just argue in the Presbyterian Church, the Baptist Church. Seems to be a lot of denominational arguing going on these days. Here's a story from Jerusalem. It says, liberal Jewish groups are expressing anger over a bill approved by a panel of Israeli lawmakers that would give Orthodox rabbis more control over the sensitive issue of conversions to Judaism. Objections are being voiced by the Reform and Conservative movements. You know, we've been studying 1 and 2 Corinthians here on the Bible study. We go back to the beginning of 1 Corinthians where Paul says, there are people there who some say, I am of Paul, some I am of Cephas, I am of Apollos, I am of Christ. So they were all divided up there in the first century in Corinth already.
Sure.
Here in Jerusalem now it appears that we have liberal Jewish, Reformed Jewish, conservative Jewish groups. They're all divided up over there too. It says that the largest Jewish denominations outside Israel are the Reform and Conservative movements, but they wield little clout inside the Jewish state. Both groups contend giving more power to Orthodox rabbis would undermine their own legitimacy and connection to Israel. Of the world's roughly 13 million Jews, half live in Israel, with most of the rest concentrated in North America. Each Jewish denomination has its own requirements for people who want to convert, typically a prolonged process that involves studying Jewish tradition and accepting Jewish observance. Under the current practice, Israel recognizes only conversions performed by Orthodox rabbis inside Israel, but people converted by non-Orthodox rabbis outside the country are automatically eligible for Israeli citizenship like other Jews. Is this complicated? Does this sound complicated to you?
It sounds very complicated to me. Probably just as much as people outside of our denomination find our debates complicated as well.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
There you go. And I'm not surprised that they're having this debate, although one of the things that I did find interesting that I heard in an AP audio report is that most of Israel is secular. So, I don't know what the statistics are, but there are a lot of people there who call themselves Jewish or Jews.
Sure.
But they're not religious.
Be pretty similar to just, I guess, calling yourself an American in a certain way, correct? Or calling yourself of German descent. So people see that as that's their heritage, but not necessarily their practice of spiritual or religious beliefs.
So, does it happen, using the story that I just read to you as a kind of a context, I want to kind of stick to that context. Does it happen? Do you know people who call themselves Lutheran, Pastor, who are really secular?
Sure.
Or, I know you have other friends, maybe Roman Catholic friends, Baptist friends over there at Greenwood, Indiana, who call themselves Baptists or call themselves Presbyterians, and they're really secular. Are you in touch with that?
You're very much in touch with that. And that's something that you encounter a lot, I think, in my profession for sure, where if you're out in a travel on an airplane or you're out mixing with people on a vacation, and you probably are going to run into some people that if they learn that you're a pastor of a Lutheran church, that you perhaps are going to meet someone who says, well, I'm Lutheran, and then you get talking with them, and sometimes they're very active in the Lutheran congregation. Other times, maybe when they say I'm Lutheran, that means, well, I was baptized in the Lutheran church, perhaps I was confirmed in the Lutheran church, or perhaps I wasn't either one of those things, but my grandparents were Lutheran, and therefore I consider myself Lutheran, but I'm really not living out a life of discipleship anywhere. And so, yeah, that's certainly something that I see.
Well, this is an identity problem. Does identity matter, Pastor?
Sure.
If you were to call yourself a Lutheran,
right,
you're identifying with Martin Luther, aren't you?
Right.
I mean, isn't
right.
that just a given?
Sure, sure. And we would hope that people would make that connection, too, especially to say that, yeah, we're identified with Martin Luther, who, most importantly, is identified with Jesus Christ. And so saying you're Lutheran means that you believe and teach and confess, as Luther did, the doctrines of Jesus Christ in accordance with Scripture alone, that we're saved by grace alone, through faith alone, for the sake of Christ alone. Unfortunately, I think that in this side of heaven, in the sinful world in which we live, identity sometimes is very shallow. And so when we simply say things like, well, I'm a Catholic, or I'm a Lutheran, or I'm a Jewish person, or anything for that matter, you know, I'm a Hoosier, or I'm from Illinois, or I'm a Cardinal fan, well, there's really differences of what people mean by that. And so taking that conversation a step further to find out what a person really means is always an eye-opening experience.
So should we care? Over there in Jerusalem, they've got quite the argument going on here, and they have a situation which I guess is different than what we have in America, because the Israeli lawmakers have interjected themselves in this and have given control to Orthodox rabbis over conversions to Judaism,
mm-hmm,
in a largely secular Jewish state.
Right.
Now there's going to be contention. There's going to be argument over that. Who gets to have power? And the liberal Jewish groups are upset. Now, does any of this really matter, Pastor, if to be Jewish doesn't really mean, it doesn't really have anything to do with the Old Testament or the Torah or any of those things that we associate with the books of Moses? It basically has to do with nationality.
Sure. I think it's probably something that matters a lot for the people who are right in the thick of it. Just as our debates matter a lot when it's something that hits close to home. And so I would hope that this would be, and I know it is, for a person who is Jewish, whether they're a faithful, practicing Jew, or if they are just claim the Jewish heritage and aren't necessarily going to synagogue and carrying on the life and the practice and the worship experience of a Jewish person, I think it probably does hit close to home because that's who they are. That's their culture. That's their people. And so they do take a vested interest in it.
So I wonder if this, do you think this should matter to people, matter to people who are listening to us now? We have people from all kinds of different denominations who listen to our radio program. Lutherans, Roman Catholics,
sure,
some Jewish people. I mean,
sure.
We had a Baha'i person who used to listen to us, actually left that faith and became a Lutheran.
Mm-hmm.
Should those identities matter, Pastor? You know, one of the things that everybody wants us to be is tolerant.
Yeah.
So if somebody adopts an identity, they take a label,
mm-hmm,
and they say, okay, I want to be a Lutheran.
Sure.
But I want to be the kind of Lutheran that I want to be.
Right.
And I, you know, this Martin Luther guy had some good ideas, and I'm kind of lined up with some of that, but some of it I'm not.
Sure.
I'm going to call myself a Lutheran, but I'm not going to believe in this or believe in
right.
that.
Right. Or you get in Lutheran circles, and this is where it hits closer to home. You say, "Well, I'm a Lutheran." Well, so am I. Well, what kind of Lutheran are you? well, I'm a Missouri Synod Lutheran, or I'm an Evangelical Lutheran, or I'm a Wisconsin Lutheran, or then, let's say, even closer to home, I know that our Missouri Synod is in convention right now. I'm not a pastoral delegate. One of our lay members is our circuit's lay delegate in Houston, Texas, but people in environments like that want to say, well, what kind of Missouri Synod Lutheran are you? Are you a confessional Lutheran? Are you a progressive Lutheran? Are you a Jesus First Lutheran? Are you a consensus Lutheran? And so there's sometimes that politicking
that
goes on.
Wow, there are that many different kinds?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, my friend and our lay delegate has shared with me many of the things that have wound up in his mailbox and his email inbox the past months, just of the different groups even within a 6,100 congregation denomination like the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. And so it certainly happens where people identify themselves with different ideologies, different leaders, different lines of thinking. I think that the identity that I as a Christian pastor always try to get people back to is to say, you know, your identity is in Jesus Christ. And he is the God who has placed his name upon you in your baptism. You know, the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit has been placed upon you, and that means that you are not your own. You were bought at the price of Christ's own sacrifice on the cross, and his name upon you is your identity, and that is that he has claimed you as his own. So no matter what subset of a denomination or subset of a culture you're in, as a Christian, first and foremost, your identity is found in Jesus Christ.
Well, whenever you encounter somebody who, you know, is this stripe of Lutheran or that stripe of Lutheran or Southern Baptists or Reformed mm-hmm. Baptists, or,
sure.
Oh, my goodness, it goes on and on. Do you just kind of say, well, hi, I'm Pastor Alexander, nice to meet you, and move on? Or should these things matter? Because there is a melting pot effect that is underway.
Right.
That's eventually going to eliminate just about all of the real distinctions.
Mm-hmm.
If a real distinction is left in place, then there is the possibility for contention. There is the possibility for argument or debate. And if you argue or debate, then you may have a falling out.
Mm-hmm.
And now you've wound up, rather than making a new friend, you've lost that opportunity, maybe have identified a new opponent that you don't even want to sit on the same side of the church with or something mm-hmm. like that.
Right, right.
So how important is it, where is the line between absolute integrity as to identity, right down the line from A to Z,
mm-hmm.
with the other side of the spectrum being, look, let's just agree to get along. And, you know, that's what Jesus would want us to do. He'd want us all to be brothers and get along. Somewhere in between those two spots, I presume there's a sweet spot. Do you know where it is?
If I did, I think I'd be a millionaire because I would have published the book on it. You know, I think it's one of those, the battle, no matter what generation you're living in, how do you maintain and defend your specific identity based upon your convictions, but at the same time operate with respect towards people whose convictions and identity are different than yours. And so certainly, you know, that debate happens, you know, among Christians, but then you look at it, well, if you're living in a foreign country that's, for example, a Muslim country where Christians are in the vast minority, well, I think that the Christians there would find great refuge in finding another Christian. I don't think that when you are 1% of your country's population and you encounter someone who is also a Christian like you are, that you're going to be as caught up in, okay, is this person the exact denomination that I come from? Now, it still may impact on how you operate with that person, and you may still hold to your convictions, but I think you'll cherish the chance to be a Christian together, to have a brother or sister in Jesus Christ whom you're going to be in heaven with someday. Yet you also see then, well, when you're not in such a minority where it's so much easier to divide and it's so much easier to kind of go at each other with our differing viewpoints and with our differing convictions over secondary matters, usually, in how we live our lives, in how we operate in our churches, how we organize ourselves, the styles of worship that we use, no matter what you're talking. I think that when you're more in the minority, you tend to probably, I wouldn't say downplay your convictions, but I think you celebrate your unity more than you do when there's a larger sum where those distinctions seem to come to the fore more often.
Are you encouraged or discouraged, just as an observer? It doesn't really matter what you or I think about any of this stuff, but just as an observer, are you encouraged or discouraged that the different sects of Judaism in Israel are committed enough, whether they're Orthodox or conservative or reformed or liberal, to battle it out, to battle it out at least in such a way as it makes the news over here?
Sure.
In the United States, is that encouraging or discouraging?
Well, I would say in a little. I tend towards just having heard this story less than 20 minutes ago. I tend to be encouraged by it, and for a couple reasons. One is just on a purely human level. It's nice to know that people in other religions also duke it out from time to time. You know that they're sinners too. and so that they're wrestling with things that we wrestle with in just different ways, about who's in, who's out, things like that. But the biggest reason why I would hope to be encouraged by it is that the more Orthodox a Jewish person is, the more rooted in the scriptures, the Hebrew scriptures, they will be. And based upon, you know, just plowing through the Hebrew scriptures, we're doing that this summer at Mount Olive Lutheran. We're working through the 12 minor prophets, from Hosea to Malachi, the last 12 books of the Old Testament. And I'm just convinced that if a person would study the Word of God and even stop before Matthew, that they would see time and time again, the promise of hope and deliverance and future restoration that we as Christians then can then come in and witness to a person. For example, a Jewish person that's familiar with their Bible, and say, let me show you how Jesus Christ is the fulfillment of your scriptures and how he is your Messiah and your Savior. Believe on him, be baptized in his name, and live eternally as his child.
All right, let's continue with this theme, identity.
Mm-hmm.
You grew up in Edwardsville, just a couple of blocks away from the Edwardsville YMCA.
Yes, yes.
Did you ever have occasion to use the Y?
All the time,
all
Chuck.
The time.
I would say, you know, if I would be able to go back to, say, the summer of 1991, you would find me there right now.
Is that right?
All day long.
And now, they got a second building, which is more impressive than the first, which
yes.
I understand is very popular.
Yeah.
I got this story actually off of dictionary.com, believe it or not, but the story says the YMCA is now officially just the Y.
Right.
It's announced its first branding change in 43 years. The organization will now be known officially as the Y. There are probably some people who don't know what YMCA stands
yeah.
for.
And I've grown to think that the YMCA doesn't really want people to know what the YMCA stands for either.
Well, it's obviously got something to do with the village people. That's all I know.
Yeah, exactly. But, hey, that was when I read this story in the Indianapolis Star this morning. I thought that, what's this going to do to the village people song that's so popular at sporting events?
Yeah, just have to, why?
You know, yeah.
All these
why?
Wedding receptions are going to have to change. But it did mean Young Men's Christian Association.
Yes.
And I suppose if a bunch of people running on treadmills and, you know, running around the track and being in the pool is an association, then there's still some of that, although I think, you know, originally the association was probably stronger, propelled by identity.
Mm-hmm.
Christian, that's pretty much gone.
Mm-hmm.
Men's, no, it's for men and women, so it's probably a good idea that they have drop the A, drop the C, and drop the M.
So now they're just young.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're just the young.
Right. So now they're...
So that means I can't
well,
go,
young?
I guess.
Oh, come on, Chuck. You can go.
But I'm wondering if you're pleased with this branding change. You could look at this at least one of two ways.
Sure.
that this is just evidence of the deterioration of Christianity in America and the Christian identity in America. It's a very sad thing. Or you could say this is good, because the M and the C and the A really went away a long time ago, and the Y is just being more honest and more upfront here. Which of the two do
well,
you prefer?
Well, it certainly did go away a long time ago in just the common speech. You'd say you're going to the Y. And so I get it from that standpoint, but I also think that the little that I've done to track the movement, and which hasn't been much at all, is I think that they certainly are downplaying not just the men's association, but also the Christian association, so that they can be what they believe to be more welcoming to people of all stripes and places of belief. And so I think that is very unfortunate, that a place with such strong roots in Christianity is kind of downplaying that in their language. I guess we see that in churches too. That's one thing that hits a little closer to home. What about a church? Do they, in their promotion, in their signage, in their naming of their church, do they communicate what their particular brand, using that term loosely, or their particular stance or denomination is? And, you know, some people want to say, well, let's just not communicate that, that we're Lutheran or Baptist or Methodist or Pentecostal. Let's just kind of downplay that. And then once people are in, then we'll tell them what we really are. I guess I would lean more towards the standpoint of, well, let's be upfront with people about who we are. If you're Pentecostal, tell them you're Pentecostal. If you're a Disciples of Christ Church, tell them you're Disciples of Christ Church. If you're Baptist, say you're Baptist. If you're Lutheran, say you're Lutheran. And then do the harder work of teaching people and communicating faithfully in your community what that means. You know, we try to do that even on such things as our website, where if a person goes on to MountOliveLC.org, you know, we put on there, what do we believe? And so we immediately want to say, well, what does it mean that we're Lutheran? And we highlight, well, as Lutheran, we confess the doctrines of the Scriptures, the doctrines that were reborn in the Reformation era of grace alone, faith alone, Christ alone, Scripture alone. But we are upfront of saying we are a Lutheran church. It's somewhat, yeah, you want to promote who you are and admit and confess before the world what you stand for.
I don't know how old the Y is. This article says this branding change is the first one in 43 years, so it's obviously been around for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering what springboard existed in the culture that would compel young Christian men to form a group so that they could associate, so that they could come together and do whatever young Christian men want to do. We don't have that anymore, do we?
No, and we see, you know, I don't think it's just the YMCA that struggled with getting groups to come together. It's Rotary Clubs, it's Lutheran Layman's League, it's Kiwanis, it's the Lions
What's
Club.
What's going on?
It's just people, I think, that they just are not into the big fellowship official gatherings anymore. But I think that the error we would make in saying, well, people don't get together anymore. No, they still do get together. They network with one another. They do activities with one another. They chat with one another. But it seems that the more organized and structured something is, the more people I sense today are turning away from it. Now, they're turning, definitely a change has been technology. I mean, people are connecting with one another all the time. They believe it's a human connection, but it's ultimately a technological connection.
Does that
so
mean
it's either going to serve?
Does that mean it's not a human connection?
Well, you know, that's the debate. You know, Facebook. Do you use Facebook? Yeah, sure. Use Facebook to connect with old friends, maybe to connect with people who are coming into your congregation, be able to communicate. But Facebook should be a way to serve genuine flesh and blood human connection, not a replacement for it. And what I sense is that a lot of times our technology and our time on the computer and the time in front of our big screen TVs has replaced the human connections that happened in a lot of those groups that were so prevalent. And we especially saw in America, guys got out of the service World War II and they went right into groups where they could keep on fellowshipping with one another like they did during the war.
So if Pastor Jeff Alexander were going to put out a letter inviting people to join his Young Men's Christian Association, How many people do you think that you'd get in response? Let's talk about that on the other side of the break. You're listening to The Bible Study. I'm Chuck Rathert, Pastor Jeff Alexander, our guest. We'll be right back.
August 7, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., a great opportunity for you. The Lay Bible Institute of Concordia Seminary presents Reverend John Loom speaking on the topic of Muslim outreach. Sessions include various topics on Islam, what you need to know about your Muslim neighbors, co-workers, or even the Muslim your child may date in the future. For information, call 314-505-7486 or visit csl.edu.
Would you like to hear KFUO radio in stereo with no static? We're now playing through iPhones, iPod Touch, new iPads, BlackBerry, Droid, and most smartphones and mobile devices in stereo. Go to the homepage at KFUO.org through your mobile device. Click mobile format, and you'll hear KFUO radio wherever you go. And if you can plug it through your car's sound system, we even sound better. Visit KFUO.org. Click mobile format.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Many countries are growing increasingly concerned about their declining populations. It's getting so bad we're seeing desperate attempts by officials to reverse this alarming trend. An Italian governor of the Lombardy region is paying women not to have abortions. Qualifying women will receive $5,000 in 18 monthly payments if they give birth. Russia has the highest abortion rate in the world. They're killing nearly as many babies by abortion as those being born. Here's a newsflash for these countries and many others like them. Pass laws to stop the intentional killing of future generations. Children are our nation's most precious natural resource. God isn't going to bless countries that condone killing them by abortion, including the United States of America.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
Women bishops in England? I'm Mike Grossia with Religion Roundup. The Church of England National Assembly has decided that women should be allowed to become bishops. The decision comes despite theological conservatives who have threatened to break away over the issue. Dioceses will now consider the draft law and must report back by 2012. Liberal Jewish groups outside Israel are expressing anger over a bill approved by a panel of Israeli lawmakers that would give Orthodox rabbis more control over the sensitive issue of conversions to Judaism. The Reform and Conservative movements, the largest Jewish denominations outside Israel, say the law would undermine their own legitimacy and connection to Israel. A Pennsylvania church is rallying around a small group of missionaries injured in Sunday's terror attack in Kampala, Uganda, that killed dozens. Christ Community United Methodist Church outside Selins Grove has been supporting a church in Kampala for years. With Religion Roundup, I'm Mike Rossia.
On the Essence of Tuesday afternoon at KFUO Radio, join me, Diane Summers. We'll be talking with Carol Walther, our good friend from Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Collinsville. Jane Fryer will tell us about what a friend we have in Jesus. And Jan Wendorf joins us, the president of the Lutheran Women's Missionary League. A lot of good Christian music to go with it. It's called The Essence from 1 to 4 on KFUO Radio. We are where you are.
Enjoy free Wednesday evening concerts under the stars at the Missouri Botanical Garden. It's time for the Whitaker Music Festival through August 4th. You're welcome to bring your own picnic supper, basket, or cooler. Picnic fare is also available for purchase on site, including brisket sandwiches, hot dogs, cheese, and grape plates, snow cones, chips, cookies, wine, and soda. The festival funded by the Whitaker Foundation, which supports St. Louis Arts and Parks. The Whitaker Music Festival at the Missouri Botanical Garden.
You're listening to The Bible Study. I'm Chuck Rathert. Pastor Jeff Alexander is with us, pastor at Mount Olivet Lutheran Church in Greenwood, Indiana. Our numbers are 505-7850 and 1-800-730-2727. So Pastor Alexander, if you decided to put out a mass email, or perhaps you could do a direct mail piece, something like that, you could announce that calling all, let's just Christian men, calling all Christian men in the greater Indianapolis area, mm-hmm. come to Mount Olive Lutheran Church and associate. You think you'd get 10?
Maybe 10. Yeah. I think that That's always a hard challenge. I think it's a challenge no matter what kind of ministry you're in. And I think there's certain things that the guys are looking for. A lot of men I know are just good family men who love to be dads and husbands to their wives, and that's their priority. And so I think that a way to get a dad involved in a men's Christian association, one thing that may look very different than it did in the early days of the YMCA is that it would probably need to involve the whole family. And so at least not every time you get together, but have something as options for your kids being involved in ministry along with the adults in your family. And so we have an active men's basketball team that I think would certainly be part of a men's group here. We're hoping to launch that into a more thorough Bible study time for men and servant event that men can get involved in, regularly serving and playing and then studying together. And so those kind of things are being planned and worked on at our congregation. It's always a challenge. It really is. It really is. Everyone thinks they're too busy, and we are all very, very busy people, but always it's a matter of how we prioritize our life.
You know, if you watch that Leave It to Beaver program, did you ever see that?
Yeah, back in the day.
You've probably only seen reruns, right?
I don't want to make you feel any older than you're already talking down on yourself about being.
It's too late.
Okay.
If you've ever watched the old Leave It to Beaver programs, June would have dinner waiting, Ward would come home, the family would all sit down together and eat dinner, and then the boys would go off to do their homework, and Ward would read the newspaper, and then the boys would bathe, and then it was bedtime.
Right.
And that's the way the evening was.
Right.
And for a lot of people, a generation or so ago, the evening period was not all that terribly stimulating.
Mm-hmm.
It was mostly designed, I guess, as a kind of a relaxation period after whatever the day brought.
Sure.
But these days, it seems that we have found ways to be busy all the way to bedtime, to be out and about either with sports or music or whatever it is, busy, 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 to the point where if somebody comes along and says, hey, why don't you join our men's Bible study or our men's association here at the church? They're going to say, are you nuts?
Yeah, I've got no time for that.
I've got no time for that.
Right.
So I'm thinking that given the complexities and the hurried pace of life today, which has been facilitated by technology, those days are gone forever, Pastor. Or do you think that maybe there'll come a time where people will say, my goodness, I am so exhausted from all this stuff. I really need to get together with some of my friends. And, I know there are some young moms groups who do that.
Right, there are. I think that the time is coming and has come where people realize that the craziness of our life and the technology that just totally takes over sometimes isn't enough. And we do need that human relationship that we can have. And we see that happening in churches where people are just really longing to get together and to get to know people and just be real with people and to share their hurts and their struggles right along with their joys and their celebrations.
Where are these people? You know, if you're living that hurried pace, wall-to-wall life that I was describing before, you don't have the time and the energy to sit down with somebody who's hurting or wants to talk.
You've got just as much time as people in any generation have had. It's just a matter of how we prioritize and use our time. I remember the biggest lesson I learned about that was my first semester of taking Greek in college. And, you know, our professor, a wonderful man of God, Ken Block, told us that, you know, we had to memorize this and for the next class period the next day. And I remember a young man in my class going up and he says, I don't have time. I can't get it done. He said, I need to meet with you because I really think your expectations are too high. And Professor Block, who had been teaching for many years, said, well, we can gladly talk and I'll gladly hear your reasons for why you don't have time, but you do have time. It's a matter of how you choose to use it. I'm looking out the window right now in my office and there were some young people riding through our church parking lot to go use our playground and a kid who probably no older than 12 or 13 years old is riding his bike, but he was text messaging on his phone at the same time. You know, and I think that's a perfect example. It doesn't matter what the age it is. We all are using our time in different ways. you know, I'm amazed at, we live in a neighborhood with a lot of young families, and I'm amazed how when the school year is out for summer, there's a few days where you see the kids out, you know, playing in the neighborhood, playing in the yards. There's a pool nearby at the pool. And then as the summer progresses, there just is less and less activity. And the kids are around, but they're inside playing the video games. They're inside on their computers. They're doing things with technology that sometimes can be an enhancement of human relationships, but other times seems to replace the human relationship. And that happens, I believe, at all ages.
I don't know exactly how I'm going to get this done here, but I'm going to try. This is from USA Today. This actually goes back to last month. It's something I didn't get a chance to cover, but I'd like to give it a shot here. It was in the opinion section in USA Today, and the question in the headline is, are social media changing religion? Now, we've already touched on this. You just mentioned a 13-year-old riding across the parking lot trying to do texting at the same time. That kid's going to run into the wall. Is what's
and when
gonna
that happen. Kid gets his license, he's probably going to hurt somebody.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
he'll
exactly.
Do it behind the wheel, too.
You had mentioned in the first half hour that social media is having an effect on religion. Mm-hmm. Henry G. Brinton wrote this article. It's lengthy. I'm not going to read it all. But just a little bit of it to get a flavor for the article. He says, Internet users are complaining that the privacy settings on Facebook are confusing and lawmakers are questioning Google about its gathering of email and other personal data from Wi-Fi residential networks. The boundary between private and public information is becoming murkier every day, a blurring that is perhaps inevitable in the world of online surfing and social networking. But how about religious communities? The boundaries are shifting there as well because of a growing emphasis in congregations on honest and open sharing in small groups. Vibrant churches today have Bible studies and support groups for every demographic, and congregational vitality is found in the relationships that develop among people in these groups. I am pushing my own church in this direction, the author says. After spending a sabbatical studying Christian hospitality, while visiting congregations that are skilled at welcoming and including people. Eugene Taylor Sutton, Bishop of the Episcopal Diocese of Maryland, says, in the search for personal spiritual fulfillment, nothing can replace the joy and lasting value of sharing one's faith journey in person with another human being. So there seems to be some consternation over the fact that, as you pointed out, those kids are not running around encountering each other, playing with each other on the playground. They're all in the house,
mm-hmm.
and they're all on the computer or playing video games or whatever they're doing. Have you been able to gauge the impact of this technology and social networking on computers as it pertains to your congregation?
Mm-hmm. Well, we certainly, you know, are very active in our website, and so we monthly have our webmaster track for us the web traffic that we get. And so we're able to pull up, you know, how many visitors we have on a specific day from unique computers, how many times each week our weekly sermons are being listened to. So we're able to track things like that and to see that that oftentimes is the entryway for people in our community into our church. Whereas in years past, if people would come to, say they moved to Greenwood, Indiana from another town, and they're looking for a church home, and say for instance, this person has a Lutheran background, and they may want to find a Lutheran church. Well, obviously, you know, before the web, people would have gone to the phone book and have looked up some phone numbers, looked up some addresses, maybe gone and visited a worship service on a Sunday. Now it seems that more and more people open up their computers and their laptop, they type into a Google search engine, you know, Lutheran Church Greenwood. And then, you know, they'll see our church and other Lutheran churches in our area, pull up there, and then they can click on our website. And so we try to utilize that technology that the Lord has blessed us with for the sake of the kingdom. And we also are active on networking sites like Facebook. I have a page. Our church has recently launched a page on there. We use email a lot more than we use letters to communicate with our members. One, it saves a lot of money in the end by not putting postage on everything. But another thing is that Lord willing, it can get right into the life of a person where they're not walking out to a mailbox, they're not going through a stack of things, sorting through a bunch of things, but now the sorting goes through in their email inbox, that we've tried to redeem some of those forms of technology for the sake of the gospel.
The story goes on to say, talking about inner peace that people are looking for in the culture these days, the author says that inner peace that comes from prayer and meditation is one reason that Buddhism is growing in the United States. According to the 2008 Pew Forum's U.S. Religious Landscape Survey, Buddhism has climbed to the third most practiced religion in America, right behind Christianity and Judaism. American Buddhism's growth is occurring predominantly through the conversion of native-born Americans, not Asians, with the largest group of Buddhists, 40%, 4 in 10, being members of the generation between ages 30 and 49. That's you, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm
not a Buddhist.
Is Buddhism making inroads in Indianapolis?
I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is. I haven't tracked that a whole lot. I think that their concept of searching for inner peace and tranquility is something that people are really searching for. I think that we live in such a hustling, bustling life that people are looking for an escape. And unfortunately, I believe that they're not going to find true, genuine peace outside of Jesus Christ. But I certainly think that people are looking for that peace and that tranquility that Buddhism claims to offer.
The author goes on to say, religious vitality requires a balancing act between private contemplation and public conversation, and both practices require the establishment of trust. Without trust, there can be no deepening of a personal relationship with God, nor can there be an enrichment of relationships with other people. This is true regardless of whether the connections are made through Facebook or through a congregational small group. Would you agree or disagree with that?
I would agree. I would agree. I think trust is huge. I think that people need that trust so that they can really open up and be honest about who they are. Yeah, I think in a church environment, that trust is crucial. And when the trust is broken, it's so hard to restore it.
That's what the next sentence in this article. The author says, once broken, trust is very difficult to regain.
Yeah.
A lesson being learned now by internet companies accused of misusing private information and churches facing accusations of sexual abuse.
Right.
And here's where I'm headed here in this article, the point that I wanted to make up, or not make up, but to get to. The author appeals to Luther. He says, the Protestant reformer, Martin Luther, defined faith as trust, not as assent to a particular set of doctrines or church practices, and his insight impacted Christianity throughout the world. It is time for us to rediscover this and to recognize the danger of opening up our lives to people or to a higher power whom we don't know very well or haven't come to trust. What do you think of his appeal to Dr. Luther here?
Well, he's right on. That's how Luther would have described faith, is a trust, is a confidence in the Lord. And I had someone ask me that Sunday, you know, how would you define belief? And I said, well, from a Christian perspective, you know, belief is more than just acknowledging the presence of someone, but it's really trusting in the Lord, having confidence in him. I tend to agree with that. I think that perhaps is a little bit of unique using of Luther for that sake, but we certainly see that is crucial in our life of faith that we live out, that we want to offer something in the church that's so genuine, because it's the precious gospel of Jesus Christ communicated in his word and sacrament by the power of his Holy Spirit. That is as genuine as it gets. Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And so he himself is the truth. We want to be authentic and genuine in how we present that message and proclaim that gospel.
Well, whether it's the Jews over in Jerusalem, the subject of our first story today from the Associated Press, whether it's liberal Jews or conservative Jews, reformed Jews, Orthodox Jews, I have a feeling that the level of trust there is not very high.
Right.
And you can pick your local American denomination and point to a variety of factions, whether it's the Presbyterian Church USA or whether it's the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, mm-hmm. the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, the Southern Baptists, the Reformed Baptists, the Roman Catholic Church, whatever it is. I almost get the impression that trust is at maybe its lowest level in my lifetime.
Right, right.
Seriously low.
Mm-hmm.
How does that impact your perspective as a pastor and your
sure.
work as a pastor?
People, you know, that I encounter many times tell stories about how they've been burned by the institutional church. You know, even aside from the stories that get a lot of media attention about clergy abuse and things like that, what about also just being mistreated by a brother or sister in Christ in a congregation that really caused inner turmoil for a person's family and led them to leave a congregation altogether? That's, my heart breaks for people who, when their trust in their leaders and trust in their congregation is hurt and damaged and destroyed, that sometimes when they leave an assembly of believers, they don't go to another assembly of believers. They end up becoming an island to themselves. And I pray for those people that they would find hope in Jesus Christ, and they would find a renewed connection with fellow disciples. But I think that trust is extremely important, that we can be honest and genuine with one another, that through thick and through thin, we're going to stand with one another. We're not going to throw stones at each other, because none of us is deserving of the grace and kindness of God. We are simply, as Luther said at the end of his life, you know, we are beggars. This is true. So we are totally dependent upon God and his genuine, truthful mercy and grace to totally save us. And we've got nothing to prove to each other. So much time we try to spend outdoing one another. We all need the grace and the forgiveness of God.
Is a caller at 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Linda, you're on the Bible study.
You're kind of off the subject now, but I couldn't call earlier, but you know, back in Pennsylvania where I grew up, we also had a YWCA.
Right? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, it sounded like maybe you didn't realize that then.
Oh, no.
Sure, sure. Yeah, no, the YWCA was very active, too. Yeah. Yeah, they I don't believe that they got...
I guess, are they going to just be the Y now, too, or how does that work?
I don't know. Okay. I don't know. They didn't get the Village People song, so they probably don't get as much notoriety.
That's true.
But they're probably being called the Y now, too. That would be interesting if Linda could report on what it's like back home now.
The Young Women's Christian Association has gone the way of the Young Men's Christian Association. People who want to associate, I think, don't associate anymore, as we have described throughout this entire hour, precisely because you don't know who you can trust anymore.
Right.
Even if you don't carry out this conversation on a religious plane, let's just talk about the people listening to us whose husbands have divorced them, or wives have divorced them, or have cheated on them,
mm-hmm.
or the companies who have terminated them, you know, because of a recession that was not supposed to happen, or savings, life savings that have been lost because you trusted investors or you trusted the stock market or whatever it is. There are just a lot of people who are listening to us right now have been burned by something, Pastor.
Right.
And the thing that I think mm-hmm. really sticks out about in this article, this USA Today article, is the assertion that once trust has been violated, once it's gone, it is next to impossible to regain. Maybe it is impossible to regain.
Yeah, yeah. And that's, I've done this publicly in church, you know, to talk. And sometimes when we're having sermons and services that are focused upon forgiveness and the harm of unforgiveness in our life and our need to not only be forgiven by God, but then to be able to impart that forgiveness to each other, I sometimes say to people, please, don't let the failures of other people make you think that God has failed you. Don't let the injustice that you faced at the hands or by the mouths or with the action or inaction of other Christians lead you to believe that God is not a great and gracious God. And, you know, because we are human beings who make sinful mistakes time and time again, let that not be a reflection of who God is. God is perfectly holy and forgiving and loving and merciful.
If a person were to, other than yourself, it's pretty much your job as the shepherd of the congregation to extend the right hand of fellowship to people who are hurting, to take time to sit with people who whose trust may have been violated for some reason and who may be finding it very difficult to trust anybody again. Well, I guess you do that kind of stuff all the time.
Mm-hmm.
For the rest of us who are isolated in our little cubicles and you know, we're on the internet and we're on Facebook and we're not really interacting face to face with all that many people anymore, we don't even know where to start, mm-hmm. Pastor, when it comes to just saying to somebody, what can I do for you?
Sure.
How can I help you today?
Yeah.
We might even think that that might be offensive to somebody. They say, it's none of your business. You know,
yeah.
Leave me alone.
Right.
Where do you start?
Where do you start? I think, first of all, with your life reflecting the God that you worship. You know, that you worship a God who is Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. And so in the way that you live your life, are your actions portraying the God who lives inside of you?
Well, I'm a sinner, Pastor, probably not.
But that's part of it. That's part of it, being able to say I'm a sinner saved by God's grace, and so my sinfulness keeps me humble because I realize that I need God's mercy and that I'm striving daily, imperfectly, though I do it, to live with love and joy and peace and patience and kindness and goodness and faithfulness and gentleness and self-control, the fruit of the Spirit. And so that when people see me living that way, though they may not know the doctrine that I believe, they will see the Spirit who lives inside of me. And that opens up a way for then me to be able to share the hope within me with the world around me. And I think that that's where you got to start, with Christians living out the Christian life and then being willing to share, whenever an opportunity arises, the hope that's within you. 1 Peter says, you know, and do it with gentleness and respect, but to share the hope that's within you, that is Jesus Christ, and to bear witness to him in the conversations that you have and the social networks that you're in, to be able to point others to Jesus.
You know, everything you just described there sounded to me like something that requires a good measure of skill. If I'm too heavy-handed, or if I just too insensitive, or whatever it is, you probably don't want me wading into that pool, do you? You'll have people coming to you to fix the damage that I did.
And that happens. That certainly happens. Yeah. Again, I would go back to saying, trying to teach people, yes, indeed, share the hope that's within you, and do it with gentleness and with respect, but still do it. Still do it. And God has wired each one of us differently. And the people that Chuck Rathert may be able to reach with the gospel may be very different than the people that Jeff Alexander may be able to reach with the gospel. And could go on and on and on for every child of God. But there are certainly people in different social networks with different backgrounds and interests that you can reach, that your listeners can reach. And they're out there, and they're waiting to hear the message of Jesus from us so that their identity can also be found in him.
All right. Go National League. I guess we can all associate about the
yes.
Probably an American League fan there somewhere.
God bless them. God bless them. But I certainly hope the National League is overdue. And I look forward to a good game tonight to celebrate that our nation's pastime.
Now, do your young boys know who Albert Pujols is?
Best hitter in baseball. You ask them who's the best hitter in baseball, they'll say Albert Pujols.
All right. It's good to know.
And he's a good man, too, good Christian man.
Good to know that there's Cardinal fans out in Indianapolis.
That's right. We're trying to produce more of them.
Thank you, Pastor. Yeah, I know. You're doing a pretty good job. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you, Chuck. God bless you.
Pastor Jeff Alexander, our Ask the Pastor guest here on the Bible study. Tomorrow we continue in 2 Corinthians. We start chapter 11 with Pastor Martin Noland, Trinity Lutheran Church in Evansville, Indiana.
Listen to Chuck Rathert and guest pastors Monday through Friday at this same time on The Bible Study. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for The Bible Study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the web at kfuo.org. Download programs from the Bible Study Archives at kfuo.org. The Bible Study is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis.